Welcome back to How to Be a Better DM. Before we get to today's show, I want to give you a little bit of context about what today's show is about. I'm Justin Lewis. I'm one of the hosts on today's show. And if you're here new, just so you know, this show is all about helping you get tips and tricks so you can be a better dungeon master. But today, we actually have a bonus episode because Tanner and myself, we were actually guests on the Next Session podcast with Adam and Alyssa. It was an amazing experience, and we talk about a couple things today. We talk about lycanthropy, we talk about how to always find players for your game, we talk about the long strider spell, and actually we talk about a giant cow bumblebee mashup. Really a fun conversation. So if you have a chance, make sure you go check out the Next Session podcast at nextsessionpodcast.com. But without further ado, listen to my episode and Tanner's episode with Next Session Podcast.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to The Next Session,
an advice podcast for game masters seeking help with their next game session. I'm Adam Johns.
And I'm Alyssa Johns.
And we have a very special guest joining us today, Justin Lewis. Justin, would you chime in and introduce yourself?
Yes, and thank you for having me on. It's such a pleasure to be here. Just from our conversation before recording, I know that today is going to be such a fun podcast. Also, hopefully I am as special as you say, but only in a good way. I'm the host of How to Be a Better DM, which is a podcast very similar to Next Session with tips for specifically D&D 5e Dungeon Masters. Mm-hmm. I'm also a player on our new actual play podcast, Pact and Boon. Really, anything you want to know about me, go to sessionzerostudios.com. But overall, just really happy to be here and excited to talk about what we're going to talk about today.
I love it.
I love the name of your podcast because it's like, if you listen to Next Session, then go find out how to be an even better DM.
Yeah.
Oh, screw you guys.
No. The name really came from, like I was telling you guys, my background in SEO. I wanted something that was so obvious about what it was. Also, my previous podcast about personal development was not very obvious. Like if you were like, it was just a terrible, terrible name. So I wanted something that people would be like, oh yeah, that makes exactly sense of who it's for and what it's about, right?
Yeah. I love that. Also, I love the opportunity to collaborate. I really believe like the world's a better place with more DMs that are looking to improve their skills or looking to, you know, really refine the craft of being a DM, which I think is just such a kind of challenging journey sometimes. I just so appreciate your podcast existing and the great advice that I've gone in and listened to that you provide. So thank you so much, Justin, for all your wonderful work on that.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, I love connecting with other podcasters, just like you said, because I feel like, you know, it's awesome for the listener, but also it's awesome for me, right? I learn a ton. I've talked to a couple podcasters who they do things very differently than me. And it's nice to kind of peek under the hood of someone else's car and see that, oh, wow, their engine still runs and they probably get better gas mileage than me.
Well, yeah. Plus, when you're podcasting, like we're in a small closet with foam behind us, you know, like where you can be, it can be pretty isolating. So getting to branch out and meet other people who are doing the same thing. It's like, I'm not alone.
And funny enough, I feel the same way about being a DM in all those respects. You know, when you're a DM for your, you know, your friend group or something along those lines, you are kind of isolated in that. You're the only DM in that group sometimes. And being able to have other resources you can reach out to and other styles. There's just so many different approaches to the best ways to be a DM. And I just really like that really like being able to see other people's way of doing that or hear about other people's way of doing that. So I love that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Justin, part of the reason we wanted to have you on the podcast was that you had a really interesting topic that you had messaged us about. Would you kind of introduce that topic?
Yeah. So to be a dungeon master, you have to, for the most part, you have to have players, right? You could be a dungeon master for yourself, but that goes back to what we were saying about being isolated, but that takes it to a next level.
I'm just imagining a poor DM in a room going, roll for initiative, roll, yeah. Wah, wah.
Or I hiding the plot twist from themselves. Yeah. I never knew.
The bad guy, I kind of imagine it's like a Clue game where you've got like an envelope.
Yes.
And you open it up and you go, oh no.
How did I get it wrong?
Yeah.
I mean, D&D, you can play it by yourself, right?
That's true.
Not as fun, but at its core, it's a collaborative storytelling experience, and therefore you need people to collaborate with. So one of the challenges some DMs face, especially new DMs, probably, you know, hearing podcasts like this, watching Critical Role or things like that and thinking, wow, that looks super fun. They might feel somewhat intimidated or not know where to start when it comes to finding players. And I think that finding players, once you kind of crack the code, it's actually quite easy. And most often in my experience, I have like a long list of people that I could reach out to, longer than the sessions or campaigns I could ever do. So I wanted to talk today about really how to make sure that you always have enough players for any D&D or TTRPG game you ever want to play.
Yeah. Boy, I love this topic. This also, I think, speaks to maybe one of my weaknesses as a DM, because I feel like that is, it is a really challenging place to start, where you're saying, this is really fun, this looks like a lot of fun, how do I get people together for this?
Yeah. I want to get a game going, but everybody is busy.
Yeah.
Or how do I make sure that, like, I'm crafting the table so that it's all people who want to be there together?
Yeah. So Justin, what are your first go-tos for getting a group together?
Absolutely. So this is, first of all, assuming that the GM, the DM, you know the rules well enough to actually run a session.
Mm.
And if you're listening to this, chances are like 99% you do. So just know that. So we're not really going to talk about, you know, the rules or session zero or whatever. This is strictly finding potentials to join your table.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of things that I did think about in preparation for this podcast that I would like to share. But the first thing, and this is probably like an expectation setting, but you will have to use your real life charisma ability score, right? Your ability. So that means you might need to brush up on some social skills, right? I know we all just kind of came through the pandemic. We were just talking about this before we got on, but you're going to have to talk to other people.
Yeah.
You know, gulp. like it's a scary thing, but that is D&D. So anything you can do to just get yourself comfortable talking with other people, whether you know them or you don't, that's probably the first step in making sure that, one, you always have people at your table playing your games, but two, you're doing well in those games because you're going to be with other people, right?
One thing to sort of keep in mind, if you are in a position where you're feeling nervous about, broaching up that topic or having those conversations with other people, or you're feeling maybe a little isolated or a little out of practice, keep in mind that, like, this... I don't want to stereotype too heavily, but this audience of people who are sort of in the geeky atmosphere and interested in playing D&D and interested in video games, in my experience, tend to be pretty forgiving for a lot of that kind of socialization. You know, you can be a little bit super interested and super maybe obsessed with your interests, your hobby. And often find a lot of receptive, wonderful people who are ready to be excited along with you. And I find that for a lot of people who are struggling to reach out or struggling to connect with other people, part of the nervousness is that feeling that I might be rejected, or that feeling that I might be, you know, not well received by others. And one thing that I want to sort of encourage people to, who might be listening to this podcast, they're ready, you know, if they're interested in being a part of your game, they're going to be excited to see your excitement and to see your enthusiasm about this, and I want to encourage that enthusiasm to be a part of what you're going to utilize.
Absolutely. I think that kind of leads into the next thing I would say, is that you need to be proud of being a dungeon master, being interested in D&D. Just like Adam was saying, back in the day, maybe it wasn't so popular or open, but I think sort of that backstory has led to it being a very accepting and generally welcoming environment. It was kind of weird to be a nerd a little bit, right? But as time has wore on and nerds are now making tons of money and everyone's a nerd, right? We all have some sort of closet nerdism. It's really blossomed into this fact where anyone can be super obsessed about anything. And as long as you find someone who kind of appreciates that obsession, you can find common ground. So just be proud of the fact that you do play D&D. And honestly, being a dungeon master, being a game master, it's hard. So be proud that you can do it where other people can't.
Yeah. And you know, you may find as you're starting to reach out to other people that they're just happy to find somebody who's willing to game master so that they can jump into the game and be just a player, because game mastering is so much extra work and kind of extra responsibility, or at least a feeling of extra responsibility.
More often than not, when I'm bringing up to people about D&D, it's, oh, I've never played that, but I've always wanted to. Hey, do you think you could like run us through a session so we can figure out what that is? And that's where you strike.
See, actually, that leads to probably the biggest tip I can share for finding players, or rather always having players available to you. And sort of the tip before this tip is, one, you need to always be looking for players, even when you have a full dance card, essentially, because you never know when the campaign's going to end or it's just going to, you know, blow up or whatever, right? But the biggest tip is, tell people what you like to do. When people ask you, how's your week gone? You can say, my week was not great because we didn't play D&D, or my week was awesome because we played D&D. Or when someone says, hey, what do you do in your free time? Or what do? Say, oh, well, I have a kid. I play D&D. I'm a dungeon master. I do jujitsu once a month or once a week. I go to work. You know, tell them all the things, and they will sort of self-identify with whichever part of you they care most about. And often with D&D, because that's kind of a unique one, people will say, wow, I've, just like Alyssa said, I've heard about that. I saw the movie. I've always wanted to try it, but I've never had a chance, right? And that's where you strike. But that's where you say, well, great. You know, next time I have an availability or we do a one shot, you're on the list.
Yeah. I do like, how was your week? It was terrible. I didn't play D&D. What'd you do yesterday? It was, I did nothing because it wasn't D&D. That's like, my days should be filled with D&D all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's where you make your own D&D.
That's, yeah, exactly.
Yes, you're playing it alone in the closet, right?
Yeah.
You know, going for a walk around the neighborhood, thinking about all the scenarios.
Talking loudly to yourself in funny voices.
Yeah. Doesn't everybody do that?
You know, I mean, I do, especially driving in the car sometimes.
Right? Oh, yeah. I got it. That's how else do you test out your NPC voices?
Oh, my gosh.
Exactly.
They're like, sometimes I'll be listening to the news and someone from a foreign country will come on like a beautiful Scottish accent and I'll just try and copy what they're saying.
Yeah.
To like get better at it. And it sounds great in my head.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
I'm not going to do it now for fear we will alienate anyone who's listening from Scotland.
I totally agree with that. I think there's a great opportunity. There's a feeling of, oh, I got to keep this hidden, or I got to keep this away, and you know, treat it like other people treat, you know, watching sports or whatever. Like,
exactly.
Oh, did you catch the game last night? Like that kind of conversational ease that people have with being able to jump in and say, oh, this is a thing I'm really interested in. We had a great time. You know, there were all these amazing moments in the game that we played yesterday, and we were just laughing and having so much fun. Like, you don't necessarily need to get into nitty-gritty details unless the person you're talking to is really super interested. But even just being able to give a cursory overview or I've got this great campaign in mind, I'm just really trying to get a set of players to be able to jump in and play, or I'm really excited about this new game or this new system, and I need a set of players to be able to jump in and start playing it. Those are great ways to keep people interested, let them know what your interests are, and they may jump in and say, woo, that sounds interesting. I'd love to be a part of that.
Like, I think it's just astounding how often we limit ourselves. Like, for example, one of the people who's actually one of the co-hosts on our show and in my current campaign, you know, the only reason he even is playing D&D is because I did this exact thing. And I said, yeah, you know, I play D&D every so once in a while. I didn't think he would be into it, right? Mm-hmm. And then he explained that, yeah, I've been wanting to get into a group for a while, but none of my friends have wanted to. And you know, that sort of blossomed. So I think you'll just be surprised at the sorts of people that kind of come out of the woodwork when you do be vulnerable and open up and share about your life.
I'm suddenly having the realization, have I taught almost all of our friends?
You haven't taught Adam.
I didn't teach Adam. He already knew how to play.
You but taught me.
I taught you. I taught Zach. I taught Rainier. I taught Peter. I think everybody that we have played with in our personal games, I taught Wilder and Katie, except for Adam, I taught them how to play D&D.
Yeah, so you're patient zero, right?
I'm patient zero. Well, I learned how to play when I was 10. So it's been a long time.
I remember in middle school going to someone's house and they were playing D&D and we were all supposed to be hanging out with them and they were all playing D&D but didn't include me. And so I was, aww. I had this like complete negative association because it was like something they were doing that I couldn't do.
Yeah.
So it took until we started dating.
I feel like that's a lot of women's stories about D&D, actually. Like, you're not the first woman for me to hear that specific story of, like, oh, I was, you know, my brother or my friend or somebody I was dating or something was playing, and I watched, but I wasn't a part of it, or I was never invited to be a part of it.
Or I had to make the food, or I had to watch the kid.
Yeah.
So often, we actually have a friend whose significant other plays in a game, mm-hmm. and they were saying, well, all these guys get together and they play D&D, and she was like, we were like, what do they do with all their kids? Like, all the women watch the kids. And I was like, ah. Oh,
that's a bummer.
That sucks.
That is lame.
I mean, I love my kid, but...
Yeah, to me that sounds like the perfect opportunity for all the women to then kind of opposite schedule of the men.
They should have their own game, right?
And all the men get to watch the kids.
Hell yeah. Every other week.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be really fun.
Yeah. That's what you and I should do.
We should totally suggest that.
Although I do love playing D&D with you.
Yeah, so I'm very biased because Adam is my first DM, but also my favorite DM.
Oh, thanks.
Locked it down.
Yeah.
Our wedding cake had skeletons climbing up the side of the... That was our little reference to D&D.
We printed custom minis from Hero Forge for our wedding, awesome. Wedding toppers.
Yeah, and my all the bachelor or the groomsmen gifts were dice bags, mm-hmm. and they had cufflinks that I had made.
Custom-made chainmail dice bags.
Yes, that I made.
That Alyssa... What's the term for making chainmail?
Wired, maybe.
Wired, maybe. Whoa. Bent.
Whoa. Yeah, bent.
I you know, you put on Lord of the Rings and you just watch while you're doing all the rings. Yeah, it's kind of fun.
That's funny. Then you're the Lord of the Rings, right?
Like, that's what I'm
saying.
Or
the lady, I guess. I don't know.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and bringing this topic. But we should get on to some next session help.
Oh yeah, Justin, were there any last things that you wanted to say about the topic before we do a next session help?
No, I think that's it. I would just encourage listeners to think that there are two types of people, right? That you are going to want to connect with: people who have played D&D and want to, and people who haven't but might be convinced to try it. Mm-hmm. And then out of those types, there are two pools of people. So there are people you know and people you don't know. So kind of use those frameworks to help you start your search. Obviously, starting with people you know who have played D&D, that's where you're going to get the most yeses the quickest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we actually covered, I think, in a couple of sessions ago, specifically like playing, how to do like session zero, how to get new players jumping in and playing the game when we talked about our session zero game.
We talked about session point two.
Yeah. And about the idea of kind of getting
session
people
negative
playing.
One.
Yeah, playing as quick as you can so that they can really get a sense for what the game is like.
That's a good idea.
Well, cool. Justin, I would love your help with a next session help question.
Absolutely.
Alyssa, will you what's our question? Who's it by?
Hold on.
Wait,
hold
it's my favorite part.
So, next session help this week comes from Subject Quail 31.
subject. I wonder if it's like a like somebody experimented on a quail.
Well, it's the 31st quail that they've experimented on. 30,
yeah.
Like Stitch is like 626.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Or maybe it's like a quail man. It's like a superhero injected with quail DNA.
No, there is already a quail man, and he wears underwear on his head. No, he wears underwear over his shorts and a belt on his head.
Was Quail Man the name of the Doug
superhero?
Oh, I totally did not remember
that. From like the Nickelodeon show? Or
yeah,
was that
from Doug from the 90s.
What? Quail Man.
Yep. Dang, that is an old...
That is an old reference.
It's young and hip.
it's young. It's with the times.
It's with the times,
man. It's groovy,
man.
Baby.
I mean, the 90s are kind of coming back now, so...
It's true. We're in the cycle.
It's so crazy to walk through like a clothing store and be like, oh my God, I wore all of that.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's weird.
Fashion. I've never understood.
I don't get it. Okay.
Agreed.
In any rate, Subject Quail says, what might the consequences of elemental moons be on the lore of lycanthropes?
Okay.
I'm currently running an arc where lycanthropy is central plot point and want some outside opinions on the title question. Basically, in my setting, there are four quote-unquote moons, and each moon is actually just one of the four elemental planes. I like the idea that celestial bodies and the planes of existence are related to one another. So my question is basically, how do you think this might impact the in-universe lore of lycanthropy? As of right now, I'm thinking maybe different lycanthropes are associated with different elements, like were-tigers are fire and were-bears are earth. The thing I'm really stuck on is why lycanthropy in this world is even tied to the moons in the first place. I came up with the idea for elemental moons way before I ever had to think about the impact on the creatures, so I'm kind of stumped at the moment. As far as I know, D&D doesn't really have much of an explanation for how or why lycanthropes exist, and I'm not even sure if they're strictly impacted by moon phases, so I don't really have a base to work off of. Ultimately, I'm not coming here for direct answers to my question, but more so inspiration. So why might a curse that transforms humanoids into half-beast creatures be affected by four natural elements?
Wait, that is a really interesting setting.
Very interesting.
I like I really like the idea of having the four elemental moons. It sounds like a lot of fun to put into
Agreed.
All I can think of is Avatar the Last Airbender, but it's like, and then the were-tigers took over, and the world was never the same.
And it was all the five elements lived in harmony, and then the were-tigers attacked.
Honestly, that, like, you could do that, absolutely, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, make it factions.
I have to say, I think if... So some of this would depend on sort of what project Subject Quail already established, right? Like, if they already established, like, lycanthropes are just like lycanthropes, like, there's still were-tigers and were-bears and werewolves and all that. But if I hadn't established that at the beginning, I might make lycanthropes actually elementals instead.
Absolutely.
And do away with the like, they wouldn't be animal forms, they would be elemental forms, and like partial human sort of elemental shape-shifting instead of into more lycanthropes. I think that would be more interesting and kind of in line with the theming.
The Monster Manual does say that lycanthropes can either reject their curse or embrace it, and resistance is like a tortured werewolf kind of an aspect. So maybe there are people who reject this elemental side of them when their moons are in phase.
Yeah, I think one thing, and actually this is funny that like we're talking about lycanthropy, because in my current campaign, one of my characters has been a lycanthrope for a while. He actually turned one of our other characters into a lycanthrope. And like based on the Monster Manual, I'm not a huge fan of like how the werewolf or lycanthrope mechanics work, really, because there's not too much of a drawback to be a werewolf. Like you get amazing resistances and stuff like that. So to Subject Quail, first thing I would say is you need to decide, are you going to keep these same mechanics or are they going to change? And I think based on what you're asking with the moons, the mechanics might need to change. And you need to ask a question of, does the moon make like the curse stronger or the curse weaker, right? So for example, Moonbeam, if you shot Moonbeam the spell on a shapeshifter, including a werewolf, it reverts them back to their normal form in certain ways. So you could make a full moon be like the worst thing for a specific lycanthrope or the best thing. And I think that would probably help me determine sort of some of the lore of what's happening after that, right? So, you know, if it is the best thing, then, you know, obviously these lycanthropes might hail from that elemental plane at some point, right? Because animals are very primordial. Anyways, I'm sort of rambling, but that's where my mind's starting to go.
Yeah, you know, you raise a really interesting point about the spell Moonbeam, which doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. If you think about it from the perspective of, like, but don't lycanthropes turn into those animals with the moon?
Right.
Wouldn't the moonbeam, like, make you turn into into a werewolf instead of make you revert from a werewolf?
It should be called anti-moonbeam.
Yeah. Wouldn't that just be a sunbeam? Shouldn't the spell just be sunbeam instead of moonbeam? And then it, like, reverts you into...
Well, now we're just talking about a spell.
I'm just saying, it doesn't make any sense.
Right, absolutely.
I think that's a super good point, Justin. I feel like the decision of the way you want to run lycanthropes in general is going to shape a lot of the determination of what you want the moons to what role you want the moons to play. And as far as I know, the rules for lycanthropy are pretty slim. Like you said, like, it's mostly just a good thing. Like, ah, sweet, I got some werewolf stuff. Now I've got some damage resistance. And like, it just doesn't, it doesn't play up the, like, oh, you are turning into a horrible monster and murdering people in the sort of horror movie fashion.
You work 8 hours a day. You spend time with your family. And when you come home, you do work around the house. And it seems that you never have as much time as you would like to prepare for your D&D sessions. Does this sound like you? Wouldn't it be amazing to have endless material prepared for your D&D sessions anyways? That's where Roll and Play Press comes in. Roll and Play Press provides D&D 5e compatible material for any type of session. Running a one-shot? Check out their One Shot Wonders book with over 100 one-shot ideas. Getting started with a new sci-fi campaign. Get their Game Master's Sci-Fi Toolkit to have your games much more prepared with much less effort. Why reinvent the wheel? Check out Roll and Play Press at rollandplaypress.com, see what they have to offer, and get a 10% discount when you buy something by using the code BETTERDM10, that's BETTERDM10, at checkout. Give yourself just a little bit extra help so that you can continue being the world's greatest dungeon master.
And I have run campaigns where we've done exactly that, where I've changed the lycanthropy curse to be, you're now cursed with this. You wake up in the morning and you are covered in blood and it's not your blood.
how would you know?
And your clothes are all shredded because you don't have any injuries.
Oh, okay. I thought like, oh yeah, like not that. Not my blood.
Yeah. Oh, I looked at it.
My blood's blue.
Yeah.
I love that. I actually would say also with the moons particularly, you can kind of continue the train of thought and like think about if they are the elemental planes, what do they affect, right? And can they be present in the sky at the same time? So for example, our moon, like on Earth, affects the tides of water. Since they are elemental moons, maybe, you know, the fire moon would make more lightning storms. Well, I don't know about that, but like maybe it'll just make it more hot and arid and forest fires will be more prevalent. Or, you know, like, are these bad things, bad omens, or are they good things?
Yeah. How do they affect the world as a whole? Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And actually going back to what you were saying, Adam, too, if you have started the campaign Subject Quail and they are more animalistic type lycanthropes, maybe what you can say is like the more advanced the curse is or the blessing, depending on the way you go, the more elements of elemental magic there are. So like the tigers like someone who's been a were-tiger for a very long time and sort of given in, they are like a flame were-tiger, right? Like much more different.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I kind of like that too. Like as it continues, you become more and more of it. Mm-hmm. And maybe to the extent of like, it also shows up more and more. If it's going to be kind of the curse style of like, it doesn't just show up. And maybe it's more powerful or more prevalent during times where the moon is full, mm-hmm. where that particular plane, you know, the fire moon is full. But now anytime the fire moon is in the sky, you're now turning into a were-tiger.
Or maybe if there's phases of these moons, maybe right. like mm-hmm. you might have bigger claws and you can be like, okay, it's going to start over the course of this month. I'm going to get more and more tiger-like features. I might start getting some stripes in my hair based on the different phases. Now, what's really interesting is if this is prevalent and everyone knows this is happening and there's a lot of them, or if this is a scarce, scared thing, like normal or not normal, atypical NPCs in a village, would they have come across this at all? Or would this be a scary thing, like in their textbooks or in their history books?
like everybody's like, oh, this is just another were-tiger.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. Doug.
There's actually, go to the were-tiger ambassador over there. Yeah. There's a, we got a bar especially for you.
Yeah.
Versus like, this is my, I've never seen one in person. I've heard of them. I didn't really know they existed. Because then it could be, there could also be like a stigma, like a, you're a were-tiger, you have to get tattooed to show that you're actually a were-tiger. So ooh, people know to get away from
mark,
you.
They mark you when you're a human.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, very interesting.
Something else I've been reading is that there is the opposite of a lycanthrope.
Which is like a dog that turns, or a wolf that turns into a human?
Yeah. Yeah. It's called an antherion.
Oh.
A shape-shifting creature, but transformed into humanoids from their original animal state instead of the other way around. Now, that's pretty funny to me.
Were they bitten by a human?
I don't know.
Bitten by a radioactive human?
And also, when they turn into a human, are they just like naked and afraid in the woods? Like, what's happening?
And do they retain their same intelligence? So, like, if they're like a guinea pig, right? So they're just like,
reet.
Oh, listen, you're going to roll your eyes at this, but Adam and I did this in a campaign.
Of course you did. Every single time I go, like, here's this crazy idea. And then Adam goes, oh, yeah, we did that.
It was great. So we had when the wolf turned into a human, they like felt an urge to like put on a business suit and have a briefcase and like go to the office and they had That's to like awesome. Get their morning coffee and stuff like that. And so the players ran into this guy who was like, it was the middle of the night because he turned into a human during full moons. And he was like checking his watch and he was like, oh man, I'm going to be late for work. And he's like walking down the street with his briefcase and stuff like that. And they were really confused by it. So they followed him and eventually dawn broke and then he turned back into a wolf and like scattered back into the woods.
Oh my God. That's ridiculous.
That's funny.
Now there's also a quasi lycanthrope, an individual who resisted the lycanthropy after being infected due to the latent power of their bloodline and developed limited shape-shifting abilities instead.
So I played a campaign back in college where I was playing a werebear orc barbarian, and it was so much fun. And that particular character could change into the sort of hybrid werebear form that was like not a full bear, but sort of on two legs and could still wield weapons and stuff like that. And it was the most broken character I think I've ever made in my entire life. It was so broken that the game master was like, this is just not tenable. I had like 11 flat damage resistance, so like virtually nothing could hurt me, and I had a million hit points. It was great. It was a ton of fun.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was saying before about like the curse of lycanthropy not really being fleshed out, and you might need to figure out how to make it work. Going back to what you were saying, Alyssa, though, with the Antitherians, what are they called?
Yeah, Antherians.
Antherians. That's a fun word.
Well, I think also with the lycanthropes, if they are prevalent, it will help shape culture around that. So, for example, if you think about like the Jungle Book, right? The whole book is about the humans hating the tiger, right?
Oh, yeah.
And if you have were-tigers, anytime humans see a normal tiger, well, I mean, this would be the case in real life, but, you know, the same thing would go for bears, or they would have a much more fierce reaction because it could be an Antherion or a were-tiger, were-bear, whatever, you know, like it's going to shape culture around it depending on how prevalent it is.
Just imagine you live in a world where, like, any squirrel you meet could be an actual person. Or could sometimes turn into a person during times.
The ultimate spy.
Yeah. Like, imagine you go on a date, and you're like, ah, she turned out to be a squirrel, though.
Dang. not again.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, buddy.
It would really change.
That's rough, buddy.
That's rough, buddy. I didn't get catfished. I got Antherion.
Yep.
But that means you were trying to go for an actual, like, cat.
No, it's just like when the...
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I took it the other way, that you were hitting on a cat and then turned into a human and you went, never mind.
No, it's just every full moon, this cat would get on Tinder and send messages.
But that's the same thing with mermaid culture, depending on where
totally
you are.
Totally true. That's a good point.
Isn't there's like a Selkie, which is a mermaid... Or it's a creature that looks like a woman but turns into a seal instead of a mermaid.
That's right, yeah.
I love all these. These are hilarious to play around with.
Absolutely.
Well, I hope that answers your question. Yeah,
I don't know that we answered this.
Probably has more questions now.
I know I would.
But Subject Quail did say, ultimately I'm not here for direct answers to my question. Then you came to the right place.
Bam. look at us. Look at how successful we were.
We did it.
At not answering your question.
Now on to Subject Quail 32.
Thunderous applause, Adam.
There we go. Yay.
We did it. All right.
I'm so good at getting the audience to stop applauding right there.
You're a conductor.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Ask a GM. Now, what's the time we're at right now?
Oh,
I'm
okay.
I'm trying to determine if we do one Ask a GM or two.
Let's do one so we can do a Use That Spell. Or whatever the search room was.
Use That Spell.
Yeah, let's do one.
Okay, so this Ask a GM comes from Cursed Kitty.
Cursed Kitty.
Cursed Kitty.
Boy, that's right up with what we were just talking about.
Are they an Antherion?
But it's not
a were-kitty?
Cursed with a C-U-R. It's Cursed, K-I-R-S-T.
Oh.
Like Kirsten Kitty.
Oh, or really like Kurt?
Christ?
Yeah. Cursed? Okay.
Cursed.
Pierced.
Maybe Tears. She's cursed not knowing how to spell the word.
Oh, boy, that's rough.
That's pretty good. I like that.
That would be terrible. Because they would never be able to ask for help.
Yeah.
Help, I'm Christ. You're what? You're crispy? Sorry, Cursed Kitty. All right. Cursed Kitty says, ideas for what magical honey might do. In the one shot I'm working on, the party will be instructed to go see, quote-unquote, the beekeeper, before entering the cave where most of the story will take place. The beekeeper is a strange, elderly goblin woman who doesn't keep regular bees, but cute little cow-bee hybrids called bumble beasts.
Oh, my God. That's adorable.
I love you, Cursed Kitty. This is a cow bee hybrid. Oh my gosh! Do they like?
I feel like that should be an Animal Crossing.
Absolutely. Well, it's like an Avatar: The Last Airbender kind of a thing.
Yes, absolutely.
I also really want this elderly goblin woman to like have a cowboy hat, and have a southern accent.
Oh yeah. I was picturing more like a Little Bo Peep style, but she's like old crotchety.
Oh, yeah, with the curved staff or whatever. Yeah.
Anyway, would they do honey and milk? Would it be milk and honey together? The promised land?
Or maybe
dang,
just
I was just about to say, though. This is like biblical.
Yeah. She goes on, I considered giving it the same properties as a health potion, but was wondering if you had any other ideas. If it matters, on the party's return journey, the Bumble Beast Farm will be gone without a trace, and the players will have to roll a wisdom check to see if they even remember it being there.
Oh, I do love the idea that half the players remember it, and they're like, aw, we can't get more of that sweet honey, and they're like, the other half are like, what are you talking
about?
Yeah.
That's pretty fun. Ooh, I like all this.
Yeah, honestly, like this is just a fun thing. Also, it's kind of making me hungry. So, like, well done, Curse Kitty.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
So I think the first thing you should think about is how big are the bumble beasts? How easy? Yeah, because like if you can ride them, your players are gonna want to ride them and
Oh,
steal
that's
them,
so
right? And
true.
take them.
Oh my gosh,
So.
would they like Buzz and Bumble and be fuzzy? Would they have
Yeah.
stripes or cow spots? Or are they the
And
size of
like,
potbelly pigs?
yeah, like if they're the size of cows, like that's those things are dangerous because they can fly, right?
Yeah.
So
And
you just
sting.
it's like having a
But only
horse,
once.
right?
No, they're
Yeah.
too fat to fly.
That's true. That's true. The reason why I say you need to think about how big they are and how easy it is to take care of them is because if it's hard to take care of them, then theoretically the goblin woman would charge a lot more. But there should be good reason for her to have them. So, that might help you scale up what exactly the honey, the milk honey, or the money can do.
Yeah,
Nice money.
the money.
Printing money.
Printing money.
I'm imagining you drink the bumblebee's honey and you can now communicate by dancing.
Oh, that's great.
Also, your blood sugar just spiked.
You're
Yeah, it's
not
really
diabetic.
sweet.
Anyway, you're dancing now. Your butt's vibrating. It's looking good. Communication by twerking.
Milk and honey. Isn't there like a whole thing on milk and honey being a
And Winnie the Pooh.
emit? Was that? Is that? I don't think that's where
It's not originally where it's from,
it's from.
but it is in there.
Yeah. I mean, I can see just for the simplicity of it to make it a health potion does make sense, although I think there are so many opportunities to make it something really wild, and especially because it's going to disappear, to make it something like really powerful, that you can't get again. Like it'd be fun to have it be something that like, she charges a lot for these and you don't know what they do, and she gives you a free sample. And you take the free sample and you later on use it, and it turns out to be like wildly powerful. And then you come back and she's not there, and now you're like, oh, we gotta like spend our money on these, milk honey potions.
Only
We
if
gotta
you
find her
remember.
again, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking like bees can communicate with like a hive mind, so maybe she's like, you can do it, but everyone in your party has to take the shot at the same time. This is an all or nothing kind of a thing, and if you do it, then suddenly you guys all have a telepathy with each other.
That could be
And
nice.
anyone who refuses, they're not in the telepathy, they're out of the group chat.
Another one, actually. So, honey, if you get raw honey from your local area, it can help you build, it can help with your allergies. So, maybe something along the lines of it gives you certain types of resistance. And then also, if you get bee stung, I heard that, like, if you spread honey on the sting, it
I've heard that
helps.
too, like a salve.
Yeah. So, maybe, like,
Yeah.
if they ingest the honey, it does something. And then, if they put it on their bodies, like, topically, it does something, and then maybe if they put it on their weapons, it does something else.
Oh, yeah. Like super versatile.
Yeah.
Maybe it could neutralize poison.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Or could neutralize any negative status effect.
Yeah,
Like
because
if you really wanted to go really powerful with it, like
I'm thinking like these honey cow or cows, these bee cows probably need giant flowers if they're as big as we think they are. And maybe those certain flowers, if they make nectar from certain flowers, those can be cures, or they could be poison.
Oh, and that just brings up another point. If they are as big as we think they are, maybe they were originally kept by like ancient giant societies, and that's why there are like giant flowers. So then even in your dungeon, you could pull in some aspects of giant culture, right? Like things that are just too big. And then maybe you could even make it kind of Alice in Wonderland, like you eat the honey and you become big like a giant, and then it wears off or something like that.
Oh, sure, like
Nice.
enlarge or whatever. Like
Yeah.
you become giant one
It's like it's the
after the honey.
Mario magic mushroom in your pocket.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you drink the milk and you get short or something. I don't
Yeah.
One side of the jar.
Exactly. Exactly.
I like these. I'm also just a huge fan of Wild Magic. So if you wanted to have something that you just wanted to have some crazy magical effects, you could always do drink this and roll on the Wild Magic table is an all right way to go of like there's just a lot of magic powered in this. You could also tailor this to the specific party members that you have. So being able to, knowing you have a lot of melee, for instance, in your party means drinking this gives you like regenerate or resistance to different kinds of damage, like it toughens your skin. Just like thinking about what are the mechanical benefits that your group members might really appreciate or really find useful in this could also be just like a way to go. Personally, I'd probably go more with the theming direction just because I enjoy that better. But it also depends on the kind of group that you're running. Like, do you have a lot of really mechanical players and a lot of like mechanical combat? Although from the sound of it, Curse Kitty, if you don't have players that are appreciating the ridiculousness of the of the stuff that you're setting up, boy, that's just unfortunate.
Then have us on your
yeah, we'll come play your game.
Your one shot. What if it gives you the ability to cast Infestation?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Then you can like control
yeah.
other little tiny
you
bugs.
Become the queen bee.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I like it.
You may be asking yourself, how do I get more out of How to Be a Better DM? You probably want even more tips, more entertainment, or perhaps just exclusive access to a secret society of people bent on ruling the world. Well, we don't actually have desires to rule the world, but it does sound like what you want and what you need is to join our Patreon. You'll get access to our private Discord, which will give you direct access to all the hosts of this show, as well as our other Dungeon Masters who are just like you. You'll also be able to make fan requests for How to Be a Better DM. And lastly, you just help support the show so we can give you ever better content. If you want to join the Patreon, go to sessionzerostudios.com/startadventure and join our Patreon today.
It's like a wand. It's like you need a bite.
Yeah.
Funny. We actually have a jar of honey from a colony of killer bees.
Yeah, killer bee honey.
I have never actually tasted it because I'm too scared to taste it.
Many beekeepers died to bring us this jar of honey.
No. Many boffins died.
No, but Adam's mom brought it for us once, and it's still unopened because I'm a little nervous to try killer bee honey.
Yeah.
What's your relationship like with his mom? Because that might also determine if it's poisonous or whatnot.
I don't know. I can comment on the podcast. I don't know if she listens. No, it's really
it's good.
Good.
But we have spent the last few years building up an immunity to IOK powder. Just in case. Killer bee honey.
Amazing. Okay. Well, shall we move on?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. I think we're going to move on to Use That Spell.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Use That Spell.
Today's Use That Spell is Longstrider.
Longstrider.
It sounds cooler than it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Longstrider is from the Player's Handbook. It's a first level transmutation, casting time one action, range of touch. Components are V, S, and M. The M is a pinch of dirt. Get a pinch of dirt.
At least it's easy to find.
Yeah. Duration 1 hour. It reads, you touch a creature. The target speed increases by 10 feet until the spell ends. At higher levels, you can cast this spell using a spell slot of second level or higher. You can target one additional creature for each slot level above first. And it's on the spell list for Artificer, Bard, Druid, Ranger, and Wizard.
I mean, I guess, it's not concentration. So at least like 10 extra feet is kind of nice.
Yeah.
For an hour.
Yeah, I could see this being used for some traveling aspects. Definitely chase scenes, right? If you ever have a chase.
Oh, yeah.
This would come in handy for sure.
I'm just imagining that Scooby-Doo in the hallway.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I used Longstrider.
Yeah.
I guess I feel like I'm so, I don't know, it just doesn't feel like it's all that interesting. I want it to do something else.
Yeah. The thing is that we don't talk a lot about first level spells because I find the more interesting ones, and I thought maybe now would be a good time. Short and quick.
Yeah. In my experience, I tend to like, what's the spell that like doubles your move speed for a turn or whatever?
Right.
Expeditious Retreat.
That's right.
Yes, but Expeditious Retreat and Haste do not start with an L.
Yes. I didn't mean that you should have picked Expeditious Retreat for our spell.
How dare you pick Long Strider? Every spell is worth talking about, okay?
So I remember looking at Long Strider, and I always have felt like I wish instead that I had Expeditious Retreat as my spell that I'm picking. Like, I almost would always pick Expeditious Retreat over Long Strider.
But does Expeditious Retreat, you can cast it on other people or just yourself? Because this is other people.
This is just yourself, so that's a good point. Mm-hmm. Also, if you had like an item or something or like a potion of Long Strider that like everybody had to help speed along your journey or something like that, like that would be pretty cool.
And Justin's right. Like, you could use this on like your horse or something. Like, it doesn't.
That's true.
You can be in a chase scene, but you're on horseback. Make your horse go a little faster.
Especially because it's adding 10 feet to your speed. So let's say the average character has 30 feet of speed. You put that up to 40, and then you dash in a turn. That's 80 feet of movement. If you have a rogue, that then is 120 feet of movement in one turn, which is pretty ridiculous because they can double dash, right? These are, what's it called? Cunning action. Mm. So I think you could definitely use this also maybe in like situations where you need to steal something, like a capture the flag game. Like this would be pretty useful. Mm. Or maybe melee fighters who need to hit multiple targets in the same turn, right? Like a monk or a fighter.
Move between targets or something.
Exactly. So they go over there, hit the one, and then they move back over here, hit the one. So if you have like a ton of enemies and your fighter needs to kind of spread out all of their hits or the monk, that might be useful too.
Mm-hmm. Funny enough, I looked up Expeditious Retreat, and it is less powerful in 5th edition than it used to be in 3.5.
Oh.
And specifically what it does in 5th edition is it lets you take the dash action as a bonus action, which the rogue can already do. So Expeditious Retreat is pointless for a rogue. The monk can do by spending a key. So for both those characters, Expeditious Retreat is like, not really very, very useful.
Might as well get Long Strider.
Might as well get some Long Strider going.
Long Strider sounds like the, like Lone Star.
Oh, I was thinking it sounds like a mount you ride that's like a little bit of a giraffe-y kind of deer.
Oh, like a chocobo?
Yeah. Or something like that. Just or get like on my Long Strider.
Or like the Thousand Leek Boots, like you take one step and you're like 5 miles away or something.
Oh,
like
my gosh. Yeah. There was a spell in 3.5 edition, I don't know if it exists in 5th edition, where you walk through an extra-dimensional plane where every 5 feet you move is like 25 feet or something like that. So your speed is basically like multiplied by 5.
I mean, that's what I feel like every time I'm on those people movers in the airport.
Yeah.
Like, woohoo!
Yeah.
So it's basically like that. I used it in a college campaign to like traverse an ocean really, really quickly.
That's awesome. So here's a kind of interesting question. So it just says targets speed, but it doesn't specify what kind of speed. So do you guys think that means that this spell requires you to have a climbing speed, a swimming speed, or a flying speed in order to use that for these? Or would you technically get 10 extra feet of movement for swimming speeds and climbing speeds and flying speeds?
Absolutely.
It's an interesting question. There's also an interesting ruling in D&D when it comes to, like, if you have a climbing speed or a swimming speed, is like a specific, especially for creatures, But in reality, like, I assume my character can swim and can climb stuff. So, like, I have a climbing speed, whether or not it's written on my character sheet.
My climbing speed is very low.
It might be, but I still have one. So I assume I can do 10 feet more.
So would this target all of those speeds at once?
Yeah, it's a good question.
But then would it be long strider? Wouldn't it be long climber?
I could easily see a game master saying, like, this is about striding.
Yeah.
Not about climbing. Not about dog battling.
Yeah, and for sure, you're not going to get a flying speed from this.
Yeah, but I would totally rule it the other way.
Oh, yeah, it's more fun. Rule of fun.
And also, like, the spell becomes much more interesting if I can use it to increase my flying speed by an extra 10 feet.
You just become very mobile in all directions.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially at first level. And you can buff your team.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's still taking a spell slot and everything, so I feel like the opportunity to be like, bam, here we go. We're all moving real quick.
Yep.
What other speeds are there? Is there boat speed?
There's speed.
The speed?
The drugs. So the
speed, you can do an extra 10 feet per round of speed the drug.
You're going to be dead in one round.
Yeah, that's going to be... That's a lot.
In the astral sea, you move by your mind, so maybe that one would also be
it's mind effective. Speed.
Yeah.
Well, I give it one thumb up.
I would say I give it two thumbs up with the big asterisk that you have to know how your DM is going to rule it.
Yeah.
Because if you know your DM is going to do the rule of fun, then I would say absolutely you should get this, because how hilarious would it be at like second level just to be like, woohoo, we're fast people.
I'm booking it.
I'm a god.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you cast it on like a snail and make like a real fast snail?
Is a snail a creature?
Yeah.
Then yes.
Yeah. All right.
That's interesting.
Hey, thank you everybody for listening to this episode this week. If you would like to ask your own question for us to awesomely answer perfectly every time, go to nextsessionpodcast.com where you can submit your question.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram, on Facebook at The Next Session and Instagram at Next Session Podcast.
And we want to give a big thank you to Justin Lewis from How to Be a Better DM podcast, and also his live play, which can you remind us your live play?
Yes, it's called Pact and Boon.
Pact and Boon. What a great name. I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Justin.
Yeah, thank you.
Aside from obviously going and listening to your two awesome podcasts, are there any other places that if somebody wanted to reach out and contact you, is there any way for them to do that?
Sure. Session Zero Studios is really the best place. We also have our Instagram at How to Be a Better DM. And, you know, if you are going to be in Utah on May 4th or May 3rd, come give us a holler. We're going to be at the, I don't know if you guys have heard about this. This is actually really cool. So there is a world record breaking D&D game happening in Utah.
What?
On May 3rd and May 4th. Yeah. It's really cool.
And they weren't invited?
Well, you're invited now. And the cool part is, so it's going to be a 2-day event. 3,000 people is the target for the number of players. And the way it works is it's essentially a war where every table are actually members of the war. Mm. And one day is one faction, the other day is another faction, and you're essentially fighting against each other. And last year, you know, they broke the Guinness World Record with like 1,200 people. They're going to try and break it again this year. We're going to have a booth there. It's called Dead Wars. You should definitely check it out. And if you can't make it to Utah, there is provisions for you to actually still help support the game.
Oh.
So you can play in your own local game store, and the results of your game will impact what's happening at the game on May 3rd and May 4th. So,
how cool. I love that.
Yeah, it's a really cool thing. The guy who started it, his name is Andrew Ashby. He has a game store here in Utah that's very TTRPG focused. But if you are able to make it to Utah, you definitely should. It's going to be an awesome event. And if you're not, you should still go to deadwars.com and figure out how to play in your own local game store and get that set up so that way you can still affect the war for light and truth and justice.
Ooh, that's awesome. Also, it's interesting that it's all over Star Wars Day.
Yeah. I thought that was cool too. I don't think they realized that, but I did.
Well, that is fantastic. Thanks for letting us know about that, Justin. And thank you so much for all your wonderful advice and all your wonderful input for our listeners. It's been great having you on.
Yeah, thank you. I've enjoyed this a lot. I've learned a lot. I definitely haven't given Longstrider a look as critically as I did just now. So this was a fun experience to kind of dive deeper.
See, that's why it's every spell's worth talking about.
Every spell's worth talking. I love it. Well, I'm Adam Johns.
And I'm Alyssa Johns.
And I'm Justin.
Yeah. Tune in next time, and we'll help you prep for your next session.
Goodbye.